olo e mafuta male SBS Samoan.
Talofa la tofa lalau leo tanoi?
Ia, yeah, talofa kuspono marola no saifua mangua.
When did you first visit Samoa, and can you remember anything about that first visit? Was there anything in that first visit to Samoa that, you know, stayed with you to this day?
Oh, yes. I first went to Samoa in 1986 with my father's family. That was in 1986. I was 16 years old. I actually didn't know why we were going to Samoa. We thought we were going to Samoa for a holiday. But when I got to the airport in Mangere, I saw my cousins at the airport, and they told me they're coming with us. So we all went to Samoa. My dad, his, my father's mother's from Palisela, and his father's from Samakau. And so we went to Samoa in 1986, expecting to go on a holiday. But we found out that we were going there for my dad's self-up.
You also had a stint in rugby league as a pro player with the Cronulla Sharks.
Yes, I played in New Zealand when I was, before I came here, I was 19 when I came here. So before then, I was playing sports, rugby league and rugby union. My first club I played rugby league for, but I couldn't get in because I was 4 years old. And I went to Manukau Rovers to try and get into the under five, but I was under four. So I had to get one of my older brothers' passport and, you know, birth certificate and walk it back to them. And they, so I had a long trying to get into rugby league. I got in, played for Manukau, Otahu Rovers, and then De La Salle had a rugby league team and a rugby union team. I played for De La Salle first 15. And I played for De La Salle first 13. I got injured in the Auckland trials, and I got injured against Mount Albert Grammar when we played the first 15, and I had head injuries. So my family didn't want me to ever play rugby league again, but I had six other brothers that could, so it was hard. But by the time we came to Sydney, you know, being a rugby league city and living in Erskineville in South Sydney, and next door to Zetlin, which is the heart of South Sydney Rugby League, you know, everyone was going to play for a team. I scored the most tries for Cronulla in under 21 and that year. And then the second year, I played all reserve grade. I scored the most tries for reserve grade again. And then in the third year, I was turning 20. I was just at the back end of 20. I played first grade for Cronulla. I was actually playing 21s in the Big League magazine. They had published it. And then on that day, I got player of the day for 21s. I was in the shower. And then Kevin Hogan sent another guy to tell me, you're gonna play for reserve grade. And then I played for reserve grade. I was in the shower again. And then they came in and got me and said, you're going to sit on the bench and make your debut for first grade against the Balmain Tigers.
You're probably, in fact, you are, not probably, you are the most noted curator, museum and art curator of Pasifika heritage in Australia. How did you get into that gig? How did you become a curator?
Well, what I can tell you exactly how it happened. From Redfern, you know, I was sitting on the street of Edward Street, and I became, by de facto, the producer for the Chippendale Festival, and then I met all of these people there. But when I sat there, as this was all going, in my mind I was thinking two things. Would this happen to our people if we were here? And the second thing is, how can I use my skill sets to not just affect the 50, 60 kids that I'm working with in Redfern and the 50, 60 kids I'm working in Bondi, who are Jewish kids, some Māori and Pacific and Aussie kids. And then I started to think about art. And then next thing you know, I was meeting up with people in Bondi where I was living who was doing Waitangi Day. And so I helped them do Waitangi Day. Next thing you know, the bosses inside the pavilion there asked me if I wanted to do work and do Pacific things because I was doing helping those people. And then I learned more skills by doing things, and then I worked. That was my first place that I worked. And then we became partners in the Pacific Wave Festival, which was a bi-party, which are three main organisations, but the main one was Casula Powerhouse, Western Sydney, who in their strategic plans was to incorporate ahead of time the Pacific community. So some directors think far forward like that. And so I was able to be at the right place at the right time at Bondi to become part of the three tri-party organisations that's doing the Pacific Biannual Festival, 96, 98, 2000, 2002. So I'm the type of guy that plane that you fly and you're building it at the same time in relation to curatorial. So it was just a passion. That's where I really found myself as opposed to accounting and rugby league. But funny enough, accounting and rugby league helped me in these areas because I was able then to go into the arts and say, well, you know, we should be doing stuff that's popular culture with our Pacific people. And one of the big things at that time was rugby league and the growth of rugby league from the 90s to the 2000s, you know, as we know now, you know, more than 50% are Pacific Islanders. So I was able to use rugby league and accounting and my desire to talk to our curatorial people and advise them about our ways of being in the modern world, and then assisting other culture, other Pacific cultures and their leadership and communities that were growing to, I guess, in the first part of my job at Casula, say in 2010 to 2016, was really about the teaching our Pacific community in New South Wales about the place of contemporary art for our Pacific Islanders. And yeah, everything kind of like fell into place.
Well, you've curated some exhibitions of Pacific Island artists over at Casula Powerhouse Museum and elsewhere, like there was a recent exhibition display at Mount Druitt that I remember. You also, you were instrumental in putting together a calendar of rugby league stars. Do you remember that?
Yep.
Yeah, because you borrowed one of my Ulafala to for one of the shoots.
Oh, okay. Well, yeah. So at that stage, in relation to that, you know, by accident or by God, you know, I bumped into Nigel Vangana down at Bondi Beach where I was living. And so that day I had just started working as the creative producer for Pacific programs in 2010 at Casula Powerhouse. So the knock-on effect Nigel was talking about is that it helped facilitate the conversation between the players themselves and the NRL and where they want to be in terms of down the road for their people. So I'm just putting that on, you know, letting you know. It's one thing that Nigel and myself are very proud of because that really sparked things off back in those days.
I'm always interested in Pacifica people, Samoan people particular. I'm always interested in their take on identity or their whaasinomanga, right?
Yeah.
Now, your ainga has conferred upon you the Matai title of Lalau.
Yes.
That and your experience growing up in Aotearoa, visiting your ainga in Samoa and all the rest of it.
Yes.
What does your Matai title of Lalau, or what do you think of yourself in terms of your identity or your whaasinomanga as a Samoan or as a Samoan male?
So for me, right, the Lalau title, I saw my father, you know, with his experience within the church. So my father was like a deacon sort of guy for South Auckland. There's no There's no Samoans from Auckland Catholics that didn't know who my father was in 1980s, because he was the head of the Sunday schools, of all Sunday schools, and he was the head of the Bible interpretation for the Catholics in South Auckland. And so I've seen my dad in terms of the Anganu'un Fa Samoa. He was well-versed. And he understood a lot, and he helped a lot of Mackays within the South Auckland understand the balancing of Anganu'u Fa Samoa and the Samoan Catholicism and what they were. So my dad took me with him. So I was really privileged to see all of this that was unfolding in front of me and what my father was doing. But at the same time, like all Samoan fathers and that, and Mackays and that, they're always involved in family and family court cases. And so, you know, I was able to see that all played out in front of me. I saw the good stuff and the bad stuff. Oh, I saw the good stuff.
Oops. Sorry. Go back. You saw the good stuff and the bad stuff, yes?
Yeah, I saw the good and the bad, and it all came in. So by the time, you know, we were here in Sydney, Australia, and my father had passed away, you know, my mother and her brother and sisters were wanting to continue the Lalau title that was handed to my father from my mother's family. And the Lalau title, what I was told, has never been outside of biological candidates. And for the first time, I believe, in Salisakele's history, that they allowed an outsider or ava or husband to take the title. And so my father was of that generation. So he became Lalau and he was rewarded. So I saw all of that. So when he passed away in that, he passed away in the 91, 92. And then in 2004, I had a conversation with my mother and her, with my mother. And then she went to Samoa. And then she rang me up and said, oh, I've spoken to the sisters and they have all agreed that you should, you know, they're going to fa'ui my old man's ula to me. And I just went, no. Because I've got an older brother and he wants it without doing any work. And so you better just give it to him. I don't want any problems. We all know what it entails, the sacrifices, and that you have to do, da-da-da. And so my mother came back from Samoa and said, no, you're going to take the title, full stop. And so I didn't want to disappoint my mum, because it should have gone to her brother who had the R4 title. He was the Sa'o back then. He should have taken the Lalau title. But they all agreed. And then I was kind of like forced into it, but I did it for my mum. So when I got the title, you know, the obvious, diaspora born, worried about the language, worried about the finances, worried about all of this stuff. But my mum said to me, you know, and I just said, Mum, you can say that to me, but it's like under fours jumping into first grade. You know, I can't even speak the nganga fa makai, you know, that language, and I know that, you know that. And she just said to me, just pray to God, and I just left it at that. You know, as far as I see it, my role is to, one, not only make my mum happy, but to actually learn. And so from 2004, we went to Sasakele to do the makai with Pui Mongo Te'i, Seve, she's Seve now. And so then we did the makai and then, you know, come home and then work with my mother's brothers, brother and sisters, and to help support the ainga and wha love lovers over here and there.
Lalau leo tanoi. Thank you so much. Whaftai te lava mō le avanoa and yep. For the talanoa.
Whakailawa, usufono mō lenei, avanoa matanga o kia, ia arofa tele atu. Ia pamangue le atua, ia te oe malau ngaluenga, ia pamangue fo I le kua, to all our listeners who are listening in there.
Like, share, mafaali sau finangalo, muli muli I le SBS Samoan I le Facebook.